The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon. And David Noble, good morning. How are you this morning? Everything is good. Everything's good. Ready for another 2 hours of home improvement. Folks, if you've got something shaking, give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. David, you're going to have to carry me this morning. I'm only on 2 cups of coffee. What are we going to do? Caffeine deficient. All good. All good, man. It's a beautiful day here. I don't know what it's like in Charlotte. It's been a good spring, I guess. Is it? Oh, okay. I like it because I've only had the sprinkler on one time, like all so far. So saving money. That's always good, in my opinion. Hey, well, this would normally be our heating cooling week, our HVAC week, and we've got asking for prayers for our buddy Zeke. He's a little under the weather and hoping he returns to 100% soon. I guess he's very close, so we'll be happy to have him back. But we're going to it's going to be me and you, bro, this morning. Right. He's down and out. So that's 2 bad things. Not necessarily in that order. All right. Well, it's all right. We're gonna swing away no matter what. I don't know. You think we can do this, just you and me? Have we ever tried this before? You think it could be done?
Yeah. I think it can be done. The good news is we got Chris in the background.
That's it, man.
He can jump right in.
he's some more than people realize, I think. So we'll take advantage of that. There's plenty to talk about this week, but David, I'd like to spend I'll take a minute, usually in the course of the week, and read something. I get a lot of different trade publications, and there's I think I shared with you last week that I was in Harvard the beginning of, not this past week, the week before. With the Joint Center for Housing Studies, and it's all like the manufacturers. I represent Home Depot there. There were some folks from Lowe's there, and it's amazing, you know, after so many years, how many people you really get to know in the industry, and it's really a great industry. I could probably be biased, but when I look at what they're trying to do from housing and affordability and sustainability, and just trying to touch on all the things, and people who are in the industry, you know, manufacturers who compete, and folks like us who compete, and people in the contracting business, big contractors who compete, but they're all in the same room trying to hammer out ways to make the industry better. I think it's pretty cool. And I know it's not just industry. I think all industries do that if they're responsible in any fashion. But as I read through the trade pubs, I came across one this week. And, you know, we've had Ron Jarvis from the Home Depot. Ron is the Chief Sustainability Officer at the Home Depot. And we've had him as a guest on this show maybe a couple, 3 times. Maybe we're due again. It's been a while. He's probably – I think I know a lot of smart people. That I've come across in 42 years in the industry. He's probably one of the brightest men I've ever met, not just because I've met a lot of really smart people who can't tie their shoes. That's a terrible way to say it. But, I mean, just they're really, really book smart and conceptually smart, but second-order thinking and thinking about what happens if you actually do this. I've never met a guy, well, I've met a lot of guys, I guess. So he's pretty great. And I was surprised. I did not know this, at the amount of solar that the Home Depot is actually using. I'm not going to get into details because I'll certainly misstate something, but I'd like to talk a little bit about solar to the extent I'm not an expert, even close to it. And David, I don't know that you are either, but I want to just think a little bit about that. And so people start asking questions, because my understanding, well, we'll get into that in a little bit. I know we're going to come up on a break. I want to talk about just like second order thinking. Now, I don't want to have a philosophy course, but I mean, when you're doing home improvement or you're making design changes, understanding like, okay, I'm going to do this and it's going to look really cool, but what does it do to some other aspect of the house, right? I want to talk about that a little bit. And then maybe, David, you could share what you hear from people as far as being energy smart and sustainability in the projects that you work on. Because it would be good to encourage people to think about, you know, how do you be a better steward of our environment? And then, David, I have thrown away your, I took your good counsel. I have thrown away and deleted every single tip of the week that we've had for these many years. I just got rid of them because they're worthless. They were tips and people want hacks. So I have replaced ever how many years worth of tips, got rid of them all, and we now have hacks. I thank you for your good counsel. And so we have some hacks that we might share this week.
Don't give me all the credit.
All right, we got to take a break. This is too much fun. I'm going to go get some coffee. Folks, seriously, we want to talk about what's important to you. We really don't care. I mean, David and I do this all day, every day for a living. Who cares? What we'd love to do is make sure we're answering questions that are relevant for you. So give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. And we'll hack this thing up as soon as we're back from these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. David, sometimes I think I say that number in my sleep. 704-570-1110. We're taking questions, though. We're talking about whatever home improvement question is on your mind this morning. We're happy to talk about it. We'll do some. I think David may even pull up some old emails that have some relevant information on them or in them, some consistent kinds of questions. Some of the things that, I mean, they just never go away. And so we'll talk about those things. The other thing I didn't talk before we had to take our break. The other thing I'd really like, and I know you can speak probably intelligently, I wish Zeke was here, and we'll do it when he comes back, just on the whole house generator stuff. And then transfer switches. We're headed into, you know, the storm season, power outages, and things like that. And it'd be nice. I guess I've become more in tune to it again. Like when we were raising kids and our kids were little, you know, I had the little portable generator at the house, and so that if something happened, we could do it. And then that kind of, you worry, everybody's kind of independent, and now you got grandchildren and you start worrying about little kids all over again, right? So right. Just making sure that they stay safe in a storm or during bad weather. All our kids are on the coast, you know, hurricane stuff like that. So I think we'll take a minute on that, make sure we talk about it safely. And then so let's talk just for a second. I don't want to go to the, well, we can probably go there. The whole solar thing. I have some family that installed, you know, solar panels on the roof, and it was pretty expensive. And I don't know how, if they did the math on the payback on that. I did it real quick and I was like, you're going to be dead before you get your money back out of that. And it might not always be money, by the way. You might just do something because it's sustainable, right? So I want to be careful not to sound like some kind of capitalist. But I am. I mean, I want to make money at what I do. I want to be paid for what I do. But anyway, there could be other reasons to do that. But do you get questions like that when you do renovations?
I do. And this is kind of my... this is kind of my stock answer with everyone, especially if it's any type of room addition or even if it's a whole house that someone is interested in making more energy efficient. you know, it's always easier when you build a new house to make it energy efficient. Let's just go there right mm-hmm. now because it's just mm-hmm. simpler.
Right.
But a lot of things can be done to a home after the fact to make it more energy efficient. So if you're looking for payback, and you, with there's always going to be cost involved. So, you know, I think the easiest thing, and we've talked about it a million times, John, is if you want to add solar panels and leave your house so you would get basically free energy, of course, you have to pay for those panels. You have to get them on the roof. You have to have it wired. If you're going to try to use it 24/7, then you'd have to have some backup battery and some storage.
Yeah.
That really drives the cost up. So yeah. Most people turn around and sell it back to the power company. Use what you can use, and then whatever is over that amount, then you sell it back to the power company at pennies on the dollar. Yeah. So you're basically getting your power for free, right? But I think if you don't, I think there's something to that. It's not a big deal, but the initial outlay is there. My estimation and the way that I view it is, and I have a perfect house for solar, and I've had multiple people ask me about it because our roof is huge on the back of the house, and it faces south.
Yeah,
we have four penetrations in the roof and three on the main roof, and we could cover it with solar panels, and I probably could I would imagine with that amount of area could probably use it for all the electricity that we could possibly use during the day, and then give some to my neighbors, which I would by selling it back to the grid. It doesn't make sense for me because we built this house, and this house is so energy efficient. I'm very pleased with our monthly bills, and we're very comfortable here. And it was the matter of air sealing. It was a matter of the foam in the attic, and then the through Scott and Zeke and even David Drew over at NASCAR.
Oh yeah, NASCAR.
Their advice from three people that I trust just implicitly. They're not going to lead you astray. They led me to the equipment that was installed in this house, and that has a big part in our energy efficiency. Cost up front, yes, was a little bit more money. The foam in the attic, a little bit more money. The glass, low E argon glass in the windows, the air sealing, big overhangs on the roof, those things all play into that. And you know, our power bill this month was $120, and I'm pretty pleased with that. And the air conditioning's been running the entire
but your air conditioning month, so. Doesn't have to run full bore every day because of all the other things that you've done and because of the kind of equipment that you put in there, right? I feel like that's great. I mean, that's what I would do. I would say, when people call us and ask us how to solve a problem, we say, hey, let's start with the least aggressive solution before you go ripping open walls or whatever you got to do, whatever the problem is, right? We try to go from least aggressive to most aggressive, or least invasive to most invasive if it's a challenge like that. So I think that whatever we've got to do to get the world, if you will, thinking down those paths and it's got to come, I feel like it's just got to come from guys like you as a consumer, and we've got to educate the consumers to want to do it, because I don't want to diss on the EPA, but sometimes they'll step in and do something that makes sense at step one, but then when you look at like, well, what are all the different ramifications down the line, suddenly you're like, wow, that was not necessarily a really good call. I'm reminded... Right. I don't know where I heard this, but you know, it's, I'm going to get it wrong. Is it Chesterton's fence, G.K. Chesterton? I don't know. Like, if you come across a fence, you know, in the middle of nowhere, before you tear the fence down, you might want to find out why it was put up, right? And it's just makes, it's just like, okay, before you have an action, think about what was it and what are some of the subsequent things. And so I think if we can get the world like us thinking about that, just ever how, however, how, you know, people listening to this or doing other things and podcasts and stuff. But I feel like at some point in time, somebody has to push the envelope on the big solar projects, because my understanding, and this is an ignorant, I'll confess ignorant, but my understanding is it's very difficult if you're looking purely at the finances of it. It's very difficult to make it get a payback on it absent some kind of subsidy. And unfortunately, you know, subsidies don't, I mean, they just don't work as far as,
well, they don't work for everybody. It's exactly right. Especially in the form of tax credits. Because if you don't pay taxes, or much tax, you're not going to really get the benefit of the tax credit. So the way that they work, I just wanted to throw in there, you know, I understand why they're headed down the path for sustainability, for solar, wind, and all of that. But I think before we go there, I think you have to do what we were talking about previous to that, was we have to make our homes more energy efficient. You have to use energy efficient equipment. That will go a long way to using less of the fossil fuels. And we're more comfortable, we're not wasting. Those are, to me, that's the steps that you take first of all, and then as you introduce these other types of energy sources, and they become, if and when they become more affordable, you know, I just think it makes sense, because why would you want to generate all that electricity from solar panels and then let it leak out?
No, that's true. And then you could probably do a less expensive version of a solar and get the power that you need, because you need less power.
Exactly.
I guess, right?
Okay, I
get that. I get that. So if you want to fix the size of the motor, you know, fix the load that it has to pull, I get it.
Right.
And I really think we probably should get Ron back in here and just chat a little bit about that stuff, because I'm afraid I'll put words in his mouth. And we're right up against a break, and we'll take it. But I do want to talk about just being wise in the decisions that we make on this stuff, and then hear a little bit of what your folks are talking about. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doble.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. Tell us what's on your mind. Make sure we're speaking about things that are important to y'all, not just us. Before we get into the next conversation, we want to do our Home Depot product of the week. And David, this week I want to talk about the Mesh Tech. It's a Mesh Tech aluminum security screen door. And what I really like about this, it's a super solid, super durable aluminum frame, so no rust, no issues like that. But the Mesh Tech screen, so it's actually a screen door, but it's a super security kind of, like, it's, you can't just cut through it like regular screen, and it still allows for maximum airflow. And it's got a 3-point locking system versus just sometimes the less secure, you know, single point of locking. So kind of like a vault door, when you click it over, it locks in 3 different points. So very, very secure. Still looks great. Easy to install. I always go through the installation stuff in the videos when I look at this stuff to say, okay, is that something somebody can do or not? Pretty easy to install. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week. It's, I think, a 32-inch and a 36-inch, which is pretty typical. And it's our Mesh Tech aluminum security screen door. I didn't look at the price. Let me talk.
They're practically giving them away.
Okay. Practically giving them away. Doesn't look like the price I'm looking at right now. It's not cheap. But
that up on my handy app.
Yeah. No, they're over $1,000.
Yes.
So got to be transparent. But again, it's for the application that you're looking at, and especially in certain applications or certain scenarios where you're looking at maybe even more on the back door sometimes than the front door. So anyway, that's it. That's our product. I love it. We didn't have to say it was free. We just had to be a good product. All right. Practically giving away Dave.
They have that same company has all types of price points though. So
it is. There's
as I look through it,
there's the one I'm looking at. That's the only problem is I pull one thing up on here, but if you go and look at the actually look at the product on the website, you can see some really cool designs first. They look pretty slick. And then the second is there's a lot of different price points. So you don't have to get a second mortgage. And it's definitely cheaper than solar panels.
Right.
Is that a fair comparison?
Well, yeah. No. Yeah.
Not really. Only by dollars. Only by dollars. All right. So we were talking. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just kind of wrapping up with what we were talking about before we went to the last break, which was, you know, it seems like we would be pushing. I've said this all along about the different things that need to be done to make homes less susceptible to the repairs that we do on a regular basis. So, you know, we've kind of switched to vinyl windows or aluminum clad. There's still some houses out there being built with wood windows, but not a lot. Surprisingly enough, I see it in a lot of some high-end houses.
Yes.
I don't know that they're building them today, but, you know, I've been working on a house that's a really nice house in a nice neighborhood, and they have wood windows. And we just replaced all their doors, the three big doors on the back. But now the palladium windows above, which go up another 10 feet, are in really bad shape, and they're going to have to come out and be replaced. And, you know, first of all, what do you put back in there? You know, the whole job in itself is massive because, you know, you have to scaffold up to even get to them to be safe, you know, inside and outside because all the trim has to be taken off. There's no room for an extension ladder in there. So, you know, when in those situations, when you talk about sustainable, that's where you want to use a product that will last. You really want a product. Now, the glass may eventually fail in the seal, but you certainly want the frame of something like that to be, you want to be rot proof.
We've seen some really, really pretty, originally pretty palladium windows and really nice entranceways. And then there were some manufacturers in the 80s who knocked some stuff together, in my opinion, less than optimally. And man, it's got some cost attached to correcting it now. But
sure, and that's what this family's facing. And then in here, here's something about sustainability. You want to? This sounds silly, but as we talked about these three doors that were replaced, and they were 8 foot tall doors. They're massive. On this whole project was costly to these folks, but it had to be done. But here's the thing that would have sustainability: had the builder included a roof over top of that patio, those windows and doors would be protected, and these folks would not be facing the same thing. And they would have had an area outside that was undercover, still open to the air. You know, you don't have to screen it because it's obviously it's 20 feet tall, right? Yep. So it would have been great still have a view of the golf course. But to me, that's sustainability because you've now protected those windows. You've helped with the energy consumption. There's a lot of things you could check off of that list. But I don't know if that falls within what they call sustainability.
Yeah. It's that whole... Well, we're going to be up against a break here. Wow, that went fast. So I think I do want to talk about that when you come back because I think that there's some really common sense things that we can do, and then there's some sustainability things that there's probably that we should be promoting. Anyway, let's take our break, folks. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a break. We're 704-570-1110. Give us a shot. We'll talk when we return from these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're taking your calls. We're at 704-570-1110. David, we're kind of down this sustainability path farther than I anticipated, but I think it's good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that when we talked about that this morning before the show, I thought, you know, what are we going to talk about? But as I sit here, you know, these things are starting to come to me. The things that we can do that fall outside of, you know, spending tons and tons of money, but simple things that can actually help us. So, you know, I think we could go down that path for sure.
I can't remember from logic whether they call it the fallacy of division or the fallacy of composition. I don't know, but like you fail to realize that every person doing one little thing actually makes a difference. Think about all the times as we were switching all the way back to the days from regular incandescent bulbs to CFLs. I mean, I know CFLs are spawn of the devil now in some places because they got mercury and stuff in them, but just that and then to LED, it's like people like Duke Power say, hey, if everybody would just convert their homes to LED bulbs, the pressure reduction in pressure on the grid would be measurable, right? And we're adding more and more and more to the grid with electronic vehicles. And if we eliminate, you know, all your cooking is going to have to be electrical and all these things, then there's going to be more and more pressure on the grid that already it seems to be, you know, waxed or unstable. So if we just get everybody thinking down the path of just do these, you know, 5 things, 10 things in your home to reduce consumption and make it, you know, energy efficient, then I think it's a win. Then you get the brave and the bold out there working on the more aggressive things. Like go ahead.
Yeah, I would say you're right. As things move forward, let these things come into play naturally, and they'll be able to be absorbed into the market easier. They'll be more affordable. And that's kind of where I stand with a lot of that stuff. You can't force this stuff on everyone because not everyone can afford it. And I wanted to go back to a subject in a little bit. We'll go back to the natural gas thing because I wanted to talk about some of the repercussions that I don't think a lot of people are thinking about. And I'm sure a lot of these people that are making these rules don't think about these things that are direct costs to us, to our listeners, to the people, the everyday people out here that make this country go round and round. And I want to share some of those thoughts that. But and then sustainability, but I'm kind of getting back to that. When you ask about my customers, you know, those are the things that we were talking about in the previous segment. Putting a roof, and for how many years have we been saying to folks, if you don't have a porch roof over your front door and you face south or west and you're getting pounded all day, and even if you're not, if it faces north, if it faces east, it still rains every day, or in a lot of places it's raining on a regular basis. It's splashing up on the door. It's splashing up on that area that ruins that door. Well, we're spending money. We're using resources to manufacture it, to buy it. To install it, if we were to protect those areas, isn't that sustainability?
Yes.
I mean, in a way, I mean that's kind of where I go with my customers. You know, think about these things.
Yeah. If you can do the less painful things and kind of coach folks along, I think it's the right way to think about it. But you still have to have industry leaders. You still have to have people willing to take the leap. You still have to have the Henry Fords and the Elon Musks and so on. You got to get somebody out there pushing the envelope, or you never get past where you are. We'd still be whatever it was, the New York Times or the London Times that said, you know, there'd be ever how many feet of horse droppings, you know, deep in the streets if we didn't get rid of horses. And we did get rid of horses, right? And now we're trying to get rid of that solution.
Yeah.
In some
at least well, it's a just daily time, driver.
In time, time, time to evolve. It's time to evolve again. But we got to evolve smart. All right. So I think what I wanted to get a sense for you. So you said, you know, you go to very practical things. And look, I am not dismissing, please, we're not dismissing genuinely innovative things.
Not at all.
For, you know, and go back to like 1800. That's not what we're saying. There's a lot of environmentalists who kind of, I shouldn't even use that term. There are a lot of folks who just think you should like not have anything that does anything. It's like, just go back and sit in your cave naked. That ain't what we're talking about. And we're not trying to push stuff back, but do constantly push common sense things and get yourself closer and closer and closer. So while these innovators are making things happen, we're ready to adopt it when it makes sense.
Sure.
So anyway, what about your customers though? I found, that there's a fine line, and I was listening to different conversations amongst smart people, right? So I have to listen because I'm not so smart myself. But it feels like not people aren't always willing to pay. They love the idea, but when it hits their wallet, it's like, well, I don't know about that. How do you see that with your customers? Are folks how far are they willing to go to do something, you know, sustainable or energy efficient?
Well, I mean, there's some things that are built into the system already, which I kind of agree with, like windows.
Right.
You know, they've already done that for us. They changed the rules. They changed the laws. They changed the way that the windows were made somewhat, and they've made it more energy efficient. So the average window has a minimum standard now that is so much greater than what used to be the standard, if there even was a standard. It's right there. I mean, you really don't have a choice. You're going to get that window. Do they cost a little more? Yeah, but very, really very little for what they've done to them. I think we could kind of say the same thing for like water heaters.
You know,
when they change the insulation factors, you know, that's sustainability. So if we do those things, in my opinion, my humble opinion, then a little bit at a time, I'm agreeing with you, John, then we're using less energy. And then as the new types of energies come on board, you know, we're good there too. You know, that saves us money.
No, I think so. And I think, and I'll be careful I say this, I think it is probably Ron who made me think about this. But he was like, we should be smart about where we push to go 100% electric. He's like, in parts of the country where we are on hydroelectric, where our electricity is generated by water, like rivers
and
that sort of thing, and there's no fossil fuel required to create that energy, then we should be like absolutely frenzoid about making sure that that's a 100% you know, electric place. But in places where we're still burning fossil fuel to generate electricity, then maybe not so much. Maybe we kind of are intelligent about how we apply those things. So I think the same thing in our houses, right? It's like, hey, we're going to make a difference. Let's do it. And let's be common sense, practical about it. But I want to make sure. It's like, I don't know. It's exciting because I truly was surprised when I read this article and to see, like, I did not know, shame on me, I guess, how many Home Depot stores actually have solar panels on the roof and are doing. I guess I should have figured that out, but I didn't. And it just made me think about that. And it's like, it's not hard to do, I don't imagine. All right. There was a couple other things that I wanted to ask you about. So I did that. I think that's it. I want to go. We're going to be close to wrapping up the first hour here. When we come back, David, into the second hour, I'd like to talk about whole house generators and portable generators to use during a storm. How to set those up safely. Well, we're a month away, but next month have Zeke back. And I know Zeke installs those things also, so he probably has some additional guidance on it. But I'm beginning to think that there's some real benefit in thinking more broadly about that as well. And I would like to make sure that we talk about it safely and intelligently and so on. So if we can do that when we come back, that would be great. And then we'll look at whatever emails that you've got. We have some hacks. You know, we don't have tips anymore. We have hacks that I'll give you a tip, change it to a hack. That's funny to me. So we had to take a break. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to sneak away for a break here, grab a cup of coffee. You should do the same. When we come back, 704-570-1110 is the number, 704-570-1110. That's the number to call, and we'll talk about home improvement when we return from these important messages.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dolville.
We're going to talk home improvement at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you, not what's just on our mind. We're talking, I just heard the news piece there, David. I guess I missed it at the top of the hour, that there's a bunch of stuff coming out from the EPA on making appliances and stuff like that more energy efficient.
Right.
I do get suspicious, though, because sometimes like the EPA will say, man, you've got a problem with biting your nails, so we're going to cut your fingers off.
Right.
They don't always draw the best conclusions, but I think it's also just the kinds of things we're talking about, just the small steps in the right direction could be worthwhile. All right. 704-570-1110. David, whole house generators. What do you think? Yay or nay?
Well, I think yay if you're in a situation where your power goes out often, or if you have a situation where the lines, maybe your neighborhood's underground, but maybe the lines that feed the transformers in your neighborhood are overhead. You know, that mm-hmm. used to be, that was the problem that we used to have when I lived out in Union County, was that our whole neighborhood was underground, but the feed coming to the neighborhood was not. And so,
yeah.
And they've done a much better job out there of getting those cleared out. And it, as the longer we lived there, the less problem we had. But I mean, I had a portable generator at the time and was anticipating installing a permanent generator, but we moved before that ever happened. So, I don't have one on this house. And it is in the plan to eventually install one. But if you can afford it and you think you need one, then you know it's a great thing to have.
So maybe the more practical solution is the portable generator. I mean, we did fine with that when we lived up in Charlotte after Hurricane Hugo, and we were an all electric house mm-hmm. at the time. And we were like, whatever it was, 14, 18 days without power. That's 18 days of cold showers.
Right.
That was where I was like, well, let's not let that happen again. And so I think it might have been like a 5,500 watt portable generator. And it was enough to run everything that we needed to run. And with gas heat, all I had to do was run the blower, right? I didn't have to run
correct
enough to power a like a heat pump, and so that turned out great. And I wired it through a transfer switch. Can you take a minute and kind of give the pluses and details around that?
Well, that's a safe way, and in the way that you take electricity from a generator, and you basically are disconnecting the power, the opportunity for any power to come into the house from the power lines and switching to the generator. And the reason you want to do that is that we don't want to have two sources of 240 volts coming into the house. That could be a bad thing. You also don't want it back feeding into the power grid because the guys right. are working. They disconnect the power from the lines, but if it's feeding back through the transformer, it could be a problem and someone could get hurt. So you're supposed to have a transfer switch, and that makes the electricity go to the circuits that you want it to. It's protected, and then it protects the linemen as well.
And you can select. So if you had your house may require at any one point in time more. Your total house, if it was all running at the same time, would probably pull more than 5,500 watts of electricity. But with a Correct. Transfer switch, you can say, all right, I want to run this circuit so that I can have these lights, less than what I would normally use, but there'll be a light in every room. And the refrigerators can continue to run, but we're not going to run the circuit that the TV is on or whatever, right? So you can have outlets active so you can charge things and stuff as needed,
sure.
but you don't have to run your whole house. And that transfer switch allows you to say, hey, this is when I turn the transfer switch on, it's only feeding these, you know, five circuits, which take care mm-hmm. of all of my urgent needs in the house.
Right.
So I think that's important. And that's not a do-it-yourself job, correct?
No, I mean it is if you have an electrical background, you know how to do it. But
well, yeah, I don't have an electrical background, but I mean I did it, but I think you're supposed to get that done by a professional, correct?
Well, you with the average person is going to hire an electrician, because if you don't have any confidence in that panel, you need to keep your hands out of it, because, you know, we want to keep you as a listener.
And
I'm sure your family wants you around. So yeah, I mean, those guys, that's what they do, and it's second nature to them. But I like the idea of the small generator, because, you know, even if you can't afford to get a switch installed right away, you still could keep your refrigerator going, you know, and of course, and other items, you know, maybe you have an oxygen machine or whatever it could be that's a need to be running. And of course, you can plug those into cords, and it's not the ideal way to do it, but in a pinch, you know, it gets you by. You just want to make sure you have a heavy enough cord, right?
Right. And you know, last week we spoke about universal design. I know we got to take a break here, don't we? We'll sneak away for a break here in a second. We'll come back and talk about that. We talked about universal design. That actually might be part of a universal design solution. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call this morning. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk about what questions you might have. David, we talked last week. We spent a fair amount of time on universal design or, you know, easy access or accessibility in designing and renovating homes. And we didn't talk about this piece of it that we're just speaking of now, and that is a whole house generator or backup power solutions. And what made me think about it is, you said breathing machines or inhalators or just medical equipment that is electrical. Most of that stuff I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of it that has battery backup and so on. But for a protracted period of time, it could be problematic to have no power, right? So that would be another consideration, I guess, right?
Sure. And even if it's just a small generator for those types of things, it doesn't take that much to be able to run it. And then, of course, if you have natural gas available, you can actually convert your gasoline burning generator to a natural gas burning. And they just switches out the carburetor actually comes off. I did mine, and you know, it's a 6,000 watt generator that runs off of natural gas. It actually runs a little quieter, believe it or not. But that's what we would use versus since we don't have a whole house generator installed yet.
Right. And you have natural gas, correct?
We do, and I have a quick disconnect right there, so I can plug in pretty quick and hook up, and I'm in good shape. That's the downfall, is there's a little bit of manual labor, but you know, if you're in a position that you can't afford it or you don't want to afford an installed generator like that, that's one of the things that you can do to get by. You certainly don't get all that you get with a built-in generator. That's a definite for sure.
Right. And I think if you have a whole house generator, you're already on top of this, but if you have a whole house generator, you can set those things to kind of like cycle through, you know, whether it's once a month or every 60 days or something, it kicks on and fires everything up and sends tests and data to the manufacturer, and they can kind of troubleshoot, kind of like what Zeke and Scott talk about with the nicer thermostats now.
Yes.
Where you can get a feedback loop and know if there's issues on, you know, kind of on the horizon. It makes sense to do the same thing for a portable generator, right? Don't wait till the power's out to discover, hey, it's not working the way you want it to. Fire it up, test it, make sure everything is in good order, you know, when the power is actually working. So just good common sense sorts of stuff. And speaking of common sense, yeah, I made a note. Because, like, I totally forgot to mention this at the top of either of the hours. It's Mother's Day weekend. I probably did a terrible job picking the product of the week, because it's got nothing to do with Mother's Day, unless your mom wants a security screen door. But anyway, I shouldn't say it like maybe she does. But anyway, so super, super, I don't know, reminding people, take good care of your moms. Remember your moms. Do good things for your mother for Mother's Day. If she's into home improvement, buy her some cool tools. If she's not, do something cool for her. All right. There. Now I won't be in trouble too much. Did you? Anyway, I'm leaving that alone. All right. Dave, let's do I have an old hack. This is one of my favorites because it saved me lots of headaches. And it's Chase It Only Once is the title of this hack. Chase It Only Once. If you've ever had to navigate your way through a crawl space or tiptoe across floor joists, ceiling joists, whatever, in the attic to pull a wire, then you want to listen to this hack. There are times when you need to pull a wire cable to a remote place in the house, and the best way to do it is run it through the crawl space or through the attic. You can usually find a spot where you can feed a fish tape down or pull a wire where you want it to be. Once you find it, pull the wire, it makes the rest of your project easier. The hack here, I guess, rather than just read this whole thing, is create a chase, whether it's a new construction, during renovation, or at whatever point, find that space where you can run wires from the lowest point in the house to the highest point in the house. When I got to this house in Atlanta, the owner before me had done that. And I have this awesome chase that runs from the basement all the way up to the attic. It's in the center of the house. So, and he had a tape there, a line tied off in the attic. So, you know, you could pull it either way. And man, how many times that saved me huge headaches or trying to drill through. I mean, I was willing to run an extra 10 feet of Romex to avoid having to drill a top plate and fish, you know, through the walls and stuff like that. It was a huge, huge benefit. So if you're building a house, did you build a chase into the house, David? Well, you don't really need to in yours, do you?
No, yeah. I did. I did, because the same thing is to get from the crawl space to the attic. If you wanted to get to another room easily, of course, there's no insulation in our attic. There's foam in the roof, so we don't have any insulation over our joist, which makes it so much nicer.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah, it makes it easy to access, and there's no dust, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, I did. And then it's actually what I did. It's in the electrical panel room where we have a panel. We have all of our computer cables, everything that feeds the TVs, the cameras, all of that stuff is in one room. And what I did was I left a foot by 2.5 feet behind the electrical panel. That's basically just a chase. It's just a void. And I can also remove a panel underneath the electric panel and open up and expose that area. So it's easy for me to fish. But I also have pipes in there that from the attic that I can drop more category 5 or category 6 cables down to go to a switch for the internet stuff. So
that's a really good point, the access points in the house, because when we renovated the main floor, I have a I just took a kitchen wall cabinet but I mounted it on the floor, put little legs underneath it, and so it was only coming off the wall 12 inches, but I use it almost like a storage cabinet or almost like a little vanity. But if you pull the shelves out of that, there's a panel behind that that you pull out, and now you have access to that chase from the main floor also. So you make a really good point. You make it easy to get to it. So that's our hack of the week, or our hack for this week. We'll do a couple more if we have some time in the remainder of the show. It made me, you just said something that made me want to ask a question about it. No, I totally forgot. Oh, well. Do we have emails out there, David?
Do you have anything? We do. I have to pull them up.
I just checking.
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry. I stepped away to look at a big fat noise that I heard outside, and I'm not sure what's going on. All right, we're back 100%. So let's talk for 1 second about the whole idea of you brought up water heaters and the benefit that came down the line when the insulation was changed. On water heaters, it wasn't huge. I remember working with all the different folks for whom we provide water heaters, because it makes a difference. If you're a warranty company and you've got to get, you know, a larger unit, you know, through an opening or in place where things were really tight, there were some considerations on it. But sure. We had a question. Somebody this week was looking at buying a house, and they were like, "Hey, John, this has a tankless water heater, and it looks like it's old. Should I replace it with another tankless water heater? Should I put a regular one in it?" One guy told him, "Hey, just put two water heaters in, and you'll never run out of hot water, and it's not that much more expensive." I want to talk about one more time the kind of, I think we called it like the, I don't know what the right terminology is, where one water heater feeds another more remotely, but we're going to be out of time to do that. So let us take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about some common sense things to do with your water heaters, and if we've got some emails and some additional hacks. We'll do all of that when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. So give us a call, 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110 is the number, and we'll talk when we return from these important messages. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dovall.
Give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. Before we take a deep dive into that, let's do our Home Depot product of the week. This week it is the Mesh Tech Security Screen Door. So not just a regular screen door. It's got aluminum frame, so that's good. It's got Mesh Tech screen. That's one of the things that makes it super great. It's a screen that allows air to pass through, so great airflow, but it can't be cut as simply as like an aluminum screen or a vinyl screen or fiberglass screen. And it's got a three-point locking system, kind of like a vault door, right? When you click it over at top, middle, bottom, it throws a bolt and locks the door. There's cool videos on there, you know, trying to pry it away at the hinge side or trying to pry it away at the strike plate side. Pretty stout, pretty great product. We want to call that our Home Depot product of the week. And let me do one other thing. Since I did a terrible job of picking products of the week for Mother's Day, may I suggest that you go pick up, I don't know how to say this, but I see them at the stores and they're really kind of pretty. Rio Diplodenia, I think it's a plant. It's in a pot. It's a hanging basket. Super easy to take care of. Very pretty. A bunch of different colors. Buy one for mom. It could get you out of the doghouse. I don't know. Just an idea. There, I feel better. All right, David. Let's see. Where were we? We did one of our hacks. Did you pull up any emails?
No. Yeah, I do. I've got one from Nelson up in upstate New York, and he his question was actually, we went back and forth a couple of times, but it was about building a deck. And the first emails that I received from him, he was wanting to know about the Silka system. And you know, where could he get it up there in that state? So I kind of helped him out with that, and then he wanted to know about framing that deck, and you know, do you frame it differently? And it is framed a little bit differently, but it's depends on what you're going to put, what type of stone you're going to put on top. So the Silka grate actually allows you to use a stone or a paver or just any type of concrete product, blocks, anything that you wanted to put down for the floor. So if you had a paver patio, you could actually put this on top of your deck, and that's what that grate allows you to do versus putting a traditional deck board or a composite deck board down. And so his second question was that he wanted to build, it's close to the ground, so he wants to build like a floating deck. And what his basic question was is, did he have to install footings and posts 4 feet deep because of their frost line up there, or could he get away with just basically setting this on top of the ground? And the answer is probably no, that his footings are still going to have to go down below the frost line, which evidently is 48 inches, and then extend up, right? So you drill holes with a big auger, whatever size you need, down to the below the frost line, and then you can either pour that or you can put a cardboard form in there, those caisson forms, Sonotube is a brand name, and that'll bring up the concrete, which would be down to solid ground below the frost line, and so when it gets that cold there in that part of the country, it won't push that deck up and out of the ground. And that's what you're trying to achieve, is to be on solid ground. So, you know, the answer, unfortunately, is yes, even though the deck is on the ground, you still have to go down and put some footings. And then, of course, I advised him to consult with a couple other contractors or hire an engineer and let him tell him what he really needed to do.
There you go.
To pass the codes in, you know, that general area. So
it makes you appreciate where we live, right, though? Because I remember growing up in Chicago where, you know, pipes, anything that you did in the ground had to be, you know, deeper than 48 inches. That's a crazy frost line. Who wants to live in a place
like that? Well, a few years back, a friend of mine was telling me about his relatives up in Manistee, Michigan, and it was so cold that they were asking, pleading with the entire town to flow water a little bit more than a trickle, because they had pipes that were freezing in the ground that were 60 inches in the ground and they were freezing. So,
jeepers. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, as we complain about the cold we have in the winter here, somebody's always got it worse, right?
Oh man! All right, well, whatever. I don't want to do that. Do not. I don't miss that. I don't miss living. I mean, family, miss family, I guess, but I don't miss living in that cold. We were visiting friends in Greenville, and some of our northern relatives were down visiting. And they're like, it's so humid, it's so humid, it's so humid. I'm like, yeah, well, you don't have to shovel humidity. It's just keep that in mind.
Right.
All right, 704-570. Yep. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just 704-570-1110 is the number. Give us a call. It's a slow morning for people. I don't know. Maybe everybody's out for Mother's Day.
Yeah, could be.
I hope you are. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I had an email. Actually, I had a couple of emails from Dan. And I get this once in a while with certain addresses. It kicks them back to me, and I don't know what it is. And it's usually an Outlook with a bunch of numbers. But in case Dan happens to be listening, and it was about Cedar Shield, I did email and respond twice, but it got kicked back two times. And I even looked up the phone number that I thought was for him. And sent him or left a message on his phone. But anyway, it was I think he was looking for someone to apply the cedar shield and put it down properly. It's not that hard of a product to put down. You can use a garden sprayer. You can roll it. You can brush it. You know, if you only have a little bit, you could just put it in a hand sprayer. I will tell you that you need to dump the excess cedar shield, if you don't use it all, out of the container, and you need to wash it out with soap and water, because the cedar shield will crystallize the guts of the pump up in the, you know, John, the orange big mouth spray bottles you could buy for like $2 at Home Depot, or $2.50, $3 now. Yeah. I've go through those pretty regular, because I'll leave the cedar shield. What I've been doing is putting an old spray nozzle back in there and cleaning the other one out. But after a few uses, they do not work anymore. It destroys them. It's amazing.
Wow.
That oil, and that's what it is. It's the cedar oil that's doing it. It tells you, if it'll do that to plastic, what is it, you know, what is it doing to the wood, you know, and it's blocking the water. So it's pretty, pretty cool.
Wow, that's good stuff. All right, we are past the break. We're going to go ahead and take it, folks. Last break of the day, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll chat when we return. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. Give us a call. We're in the final round here. We have Tom. Tom, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Thanks for all the great info. I really love this show.
Well, thanks for listening.
Okay, yes. My question is, I have some old hardwood floors, and they get kind of dull looking, and I didn't want to refinish them right now. So I was wondering, do you know of anything I could put on them to maybe bring back the shine a little bit and maybe save them a little longer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bona, and I think there's probably several other products out there, but I'm familiar with the Bona products. It's Bona. It's available at Home Depot, and I'm sure other retailers as well. But that product is it's kind of almost like a, when you say like a wax, John, I don't think that it's a wax.
Yeah, but it's not a wax per se, but it it fills just a little scratches and gives it a sheen. I don't know if that's the right way to say it or not.
Well, it does. It's almost like it's just a liquid, and you put it down with any type of a mop. They'll probably tell you some type of a microfiber. But it actually adds a coating to the floor that is not a problem later when you go to sand the floors. It's not like putting paste wax down. Right. It's more of an acrylic or liquid wax, and it holds up pretty well. You know, depending on how long it is until you redo your floors, you may have to put it down another time or two, but. It's not very expensive for what it is. They call it floor polish. So a 32-ounce bottle at Home Depot is $20.
Okay.
And basically, you just mop it down. If you go to, you can look it up online. There's actually only one in stock in Pineville, believe it or not. So it must be a good product. Quick and easy. And you put it down with a microfiber, and it fills in small scratches, and it'll give a little bit of sheen to the floor. So, yeah, I think you could get away with that. Just clean the floor real well, and then mop it down. I think you'll be in good shape.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Tom. All right, Tom's off to refinish his floors. Like without doing a sanding job. Here comes Brian. Brian, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. I hope you are too.
We are. How can we help?
I would like to put a fresh coat of paint on my baseboards and crown molding. It's got a bit of a sheen to it. I've cleaned it with soap and water and rinsed it. But do I need to prepare the surface in any way to receive the new coat?
It depends. Sometimes when you have too much sheen on it, Do you know whether it's an oil-based product or a latex-based product that's on it now?
I don't know. It's whatever, when they were installed, the builder.
How old is the house? How old is the house, Brian?
92. It was a Ryan okay. home, if that helps.
Okay. Yeah, so probably it's probably a latex base. It never hurts, Brian, honestly, just to take I like the sanding sponges because they can kind of match the contour of the profile of the molding a little bit. It never hurts to kind of wipe them down with that just to rough up the surface a little bit. You can also take you could use steel wool, but then you have the issue of residue, like little particles of the steel wool, and you put a latex paint on that. It could rust. You can see rust, you know, marks later on. So I like the sanding sponge and just kind of almost like you're just dusting them off or wiping them down. You don't have to get super aggressive just to knock some of the high gloss off of there. And then you should be totally fine. You may want to test it in a couple places. It's entirely possible that you don't have to do anything, put some on it. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't, what's the terminology? There's a term for it, David, where it just kind of, you put the paint on and it's sort of just bubbles into spots and it doesn't cover. There's a word for that. I don't remember what it is.
We're fish eyes. Yeah, it could fisheye. Yeah. It'll separate yeah. because it's not getting a bond. But most acrylic paints today will go over those types
just about
of surfaces.
Anything.
Yeah, and since it's not a cabinet, Brian, it's not cabinet doors or anything or things doors that you're going to be touching. You probably could get away without the sanding because anytime you say that to someone, it's daunting when they start thinking about. You mean I got to get on that ladder and go around that whole room. Or get on my knees and do the baseboard all the way around. You're probably okay with just an acrylic, a good acrylic latex paint. Don't buy the bottom of the barrel paint. And then there's a little trick if it's white. And John, I don't know if you've heard this, but you can have them add a drop or two of black in that white paint, and it'll help cover a little bit better.
Yeah.
Is that crazy or what?
No, it's old
painter's
it's
trick.
old school stuff. You see the paints that cover well sometimes. They'll make up for lower quality ingredients by adding some dark filler like that, clays and stuff, and mm-hmm. it helps it to cover over better. So, Brian, does that help you out?
Yes, it does. I like going with Bear. So
You'll be good with that. Yeah, I think you'd be totally fine. I'm a Bear fan, also a Bears fan, but that doesn't go as well as Bear paint. But yeah, you're working with a really great product from a coverage perspective to start with.
Okay, so that helps. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. We appreciate the call. We're having a conversation yesterday. Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna add in there that when he was talking about that high gloss look, and that was popular for a while, but I see more and more people going to satin and semi-gloss. It's still as mm-hmm. washable and scrubbable. The beauty of a lower sheen, whether it be on your doors or trim, or even if you're doing floors with polyurethane, a lower gloss tends to show less imperfections.
Yep.
In the wood. When a house is brand new, it's not a big deal because everything's good, but it's not dinged up or it doesn't show where the nails were installed or where it was filled or partially filled. You tend to get away with a lot more. So just something to think about as you pick the sheen level. You can still get the scrubability and be able to wash and clean things off, but I think you get a little nicer look when you get off of that real high gloss.
You absolutely do. And that's true for sure on walls and ceilings, right? I mean, there's a reason that some renovators and builders use a dead flat paint on the ceiling because it's
right.
like if there's any imperfections in the drywall job, it hides them when you go dead flat. So that's good guidance. The other thing I think just while we're on that topic is you said it, Dave, is just pick a quality paint. Barb and I were having this discussion yesterday, and she's got like color opinions, right, about things and names. I'm like, that's great. But the get a product that's going to give you decent coverage, spend an extra couple bucks. I'm a Bear fan only because I've seen how it works, and I've been behind the scenes, you know, in the manufacturing and done the double blind tests with professionals painting and installing. And I've never lost a challenge when I have somebody saying, which paint do I choose? So I tend to be a data-based now, not just an emotional Bear fan.
Right.
But there's a lot of great products out there, awesome products. We were talking about some of the cool things like Sherwin-Williams, I think, picked up the Duraclad line. And so we got to be out of here, folks. Remember, the most important kind of home improvement show, the most important kind of home that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. Don't forget to work on this week, that this week. And we'll see you next week on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.